Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10, select styles only.
They're going to have nightmares about me.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. We're cranking out the podcast today and we're doing another of the season preview shows and I'm going to be talking about a team that's in a large degree of flux, a lot of turnover on the roster, so lots of fantasy opportunities that are going to come our way, and that is the Indiana Pacers. And to chat about the Indiana Pacers, I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Pacers podcast, Adam Friedman. Adam, welcome to the show.
Glad to be on.
We have got a ton to talk about with the Indiana Pacers, and we start off all these shows by talking about the players that have joined the team and how they're going to impact, and basically it's almost half a team that's changed over with this Indiana Pacers squad. So we'll start with the biggest acquisition, the main piece, I think, in the Paul George trade, which wasn't a great trade.
The worst trade deal ever signed anywhere, but certainly ever
very
signed
mediocre, in this country.
Victor Oladipo. He comes across now after a season in which people were disappointed in his output in Oklahoma City. But as I've said plenty of times on this podcast, part of the reason why his fantasy value dropped last season is he inexplicably shot 10% worse from the free throw line. His steal and block rate was cut in half. And that's got nothing to do with playing with Russell Westbrook. Your free throw percentage and your steals and blocks, it's got nothing to do with Russ having a historic usage. Yes, his assist rate dropped, which is partly to do with playing with Westbrook, but he actually was more efficient. He shot better from the field. He shot better from three. He still scored a decent amount of points, but he now heads to Indiana to be, along with Miles Turner, the 1A and 1B of the offense for this team. So how do you see Oladipo running things? Is it more back to the Orlando Oladipo where he's handling the ball a lot and he gets back to that sort of four assists and maybe even pushes to 20 points? Is that how you see him fitting in with this Pacers squad?
So I think Oladipo's stats were depressed last season, a huge amount of, I know you said his shooting percentage was better and whatnot, but I think playing by Russell Westbrook just depressed Oladipo's stats overall. He was basically like a 15-point scorer last year. With Orlando, his last year, he was about 18 points a game. Yep. And I think when he comes to the Pacers, that can transition more into close to 20 points a game. I think it's going to depend on, one, how many minutes he's given and what type of role he's asked to be. So right now he's the starting shooting guard, but if he's asked to play more of a point guard role, he might not get as many points and many shots. It just kind of depends where the team sees Miles Turner going. I mean, I would like to hope Oladipo gets to 20 points a game. You know, he is probably the second best player or maybe the first best player on a bad team, which usually those guys get close to 20 points a game. But fantasy-wise, I think you can expect him to get probably between 18 and 20 a game and maybe between close to five assists and five rebounds.
He is a guy that, and this happens all the time, guys that have disappointing seasons like he had last season, they get significantly pushed down. So he's getting drafted at 64 in Yahoo, sorry, and 68 on ESPN. And he, to me, he's a baseline, comfortable, top 50 player that if he does, and that's with me thinking he scores 17.5 points a game. If he scores 20 points a game, then you're talking about top 30 numbers. If he gets to 25-5, like the Tyreek Evans rookie special, then we're talking about a top 20, top 25 type of player. If the steals and blocks come back up, he can go really, really high, and you can get him at a significant discount in all your fantasy drafts. So I imagine those ADP numbers will start to come in a little bit, but you talked about minutes. I think that he's getting a fair chunk of minutes here at shooting guard. He'll handle the ball quite a bit for this team as well, and I just don't see any way that he's playing 30 minutes a night. I think he has to be playing more than that, and he's got a real chance. I think I'm fairly conservative in what I'm projecting him for, and he can actually go well over that and provide even more value than what we're currently seeing with him. The other guy that came over in that trade was Domantas Sabonis, who started a big chunk of the season for the Thunder last year. Didn't really do a huge amount to get people too excited But he moves across now, and the Pacers must obviously like him as a player to be included as part of that package for Paul George. But what do you see with him? He's backing up Thad Young. Do you think there's a chance, Adam, that he can play the backup center and maybe even play that role ahead of Al Jefferson at times?
So that's been a big topic in Indiana Pacers Twitter, is whether Sabonis will almost play center on the floor instead of playing power forward. Okay. I just don't know where McMillan is going with Sabonis this season. I think it's going to take a little while to figure out what they want to do with him. I think the only way he really gets a significant amount of minutes, I'm talking like over 20, over 20, 25, is probably if the Pacers decide to trade Thad Young. If they do, it's because they think Sabonis can be the starting power forward or starting center, depending on what they decide to do. So you just got to look for that. I mean, I don't really know. I can't really project how many points he's going to have just because I can't predict his minutes very well at this moment. So I think he's kind of one of those guys you pick up on your fantasy roster once you see the Pacers make a move. So the minute Thad Young, if he gets traded, Sabonis should be picked up because he'll become the starting power forward at that point. But until then, unless you're playing in like a really deep fantasy basketball draft, I wouldn't touch him.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what you should be looking at with Sabonis. Yeah, he could get 29 a night if Thad is moved, but otherwise he's going to be playing backup four. He'll play some backup 5 minutes there. He didn't show us massive amounts in Oklahoma City to expect us to think that he's going to be this great fantasy option. He was inefficient from the line. He was inefficient from three. He was inefficient from the field. He's not a guy that's going to put up big defensive numbers, no steals and blocks, but he is a very, very good rebounder. So if you see those minutes go up, he can be a guy to really help supplement that rebound category. But I wouldn't expect massive, massive improvements this year from Sabonis, just because I think his minutes are going to be similar to what he saw in Oklahoma City, unless, as we said, unless Young does happen to get traded. The other guy that comes in who's going to be a starter most likely, and I'll get your take on that, is Darren Collison, who comes across from the Sacramento Kings. And at this point, I would say he's the favorite to be the starting point guard, but it's by no means decided. They also brought in Corey Joseph to challenge for that position. A, do you see Collison starting in his second go-around in Indiana? And is it a situation where he's playing the bulk of the minutes, or is it going to be more of a 29-minute situation where he's splitting that time with Joseph?
So when Collison was brought in, he was told he's going to get the starting job. So I'd expect Collison to be the starting point guard for the Pacers. I'd also expect him to touch about 29, 30 minutes. I did a little projection, just kind of I thought minutes would go, and Collison reached about 30 minutes. Stats-wise, I think he'll have a decent year. I mean, he was a 40% three-point shooter last season, and that was on a bad team as well in Sacramento. So, you know, if he can do that again, that's a great fit. That's good efficiency numbers. I imagine Collison probably can get maybe above 10 points a game. Like I said, it depends what kind of role they decide to play him in, whether they decide to make him just sort of a spot-up score in the corner and allow Oladipo to control the offense at times. That will kind of affect his assist numbers. But I imagine that Collison will get the bulk of the point guard minutes. But, you know, Corey Joseph has shown at times that he's a pretty decent backup, and he could end up being closer to even than fantasy numbers might want. But again, Collison should be the starting guard and should get about 30 minutes.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.
Yeah, I've got him projected at 30 minutes as well. I think that he's a fantastic late-round pick. I've talked about this on lots of other shows. There's so many of these late-round point guards. You can get Jeremy Lin's available that same area. Rajon Rondo's available at that same area. Jamal Murray's available there. And all of those guys, if you don't get the point guards early, you can get these guys who should be solid. Like, I've got him at 13 and 5. He gets a steal. He hits his threes. He's really efficient from the field, like super high field goal percentage, super high free throw percentage, hits his threes at a high rate. I think he's a really solid guy with maybe limited upside. But if for some reason they say, well, Joseph's just not cutting it and Collison's playing well and they're playing 35 a night, then he's got top 70 upside. So I really do like him as a pick there. I agree with you that I think that he will be the starter for this team. I'm not a massive believer in Corey Joseph as a player. I just think he's somewhat overrated in what he does. So I do think that Collison's going to have that leg up there and maybe even have the potential to play more minutes. As for Joseph, We saw him in Toronto run the point sometimes, but also play next to Kyle Lowry. I think that will be, you know, some of his role here, but he's not a great fantasy guy. He doesn't rack up steals. He doesn't hit threes in big quantities. He's not a huge assist guy. He's not a high volume player. He's worse in efficiency than Collison. And to me, I don't really see any use in drafting him in any sort of standard leagues. Do you see him or Lance Stephenson perhaps getting more of those backup minutes at the one and the two this year?
Well, so I think as Pacer fans and just the way Lance riles up the crowd, he'll probably be the Pacer fans will want to get the bulk of the 2 minutes. I think he will just because I think he is a better defender than Joseph. Although my co-host on the Lockdown Pacers podcast pointed out that Joseph played 41% of his minutes at the two
yep.
last season, so Joseph definitely can do that. I just think it depends what kind of Lance Stephenson shows up. I mean, Pacer fans are still hoping they see a 2-on-13 Lance, like when he had that great almost triple-double type season. I am not a believer in that 100% because he's hasn't shown that ability any time in the past 3 years. I would probably stay away from Lance and Corey Joseph at this point early on. Again, it always depends how deep your league is, but if early on, you know, you can always pick up those guys later on depending on how their season goes, but drafting them is kind of like a waste because they're not going to – neither one's going to play more than 20 minutes a game, and so they're not going to put up enough points or get big enough numbers to make a difference. I mean, Lance has, of course, the triple-double potential, and in some leagues I know the guy playing, we add a little bonus triple-double, so maybe Lance could come away like that if he gets more minutes, but I would stay away from, any player on the Pacers that's not in the starting lineup.
Stephenson's there's obviously some Stephenson fans that are drafting because his ADP on ESPN is 140 and it's 145 on Yahoo, and I honestly have no idea why he's being drafted yep. there. Corey Joseph's at 140 as well. It's just such limited upside for that. Look, Corey Joseph might be the 147th ranked player this season, but there's just no value. He's just not getting up there. He's not top 75 upside that Collison is. There's just no point in taking him there. Yeah, great. Collison goes down. Joseph starts. He plays 31 minutes. He puts up value of 100 for 2 weeks, and you add him in that time, and then you get rid of him. I just don't see it for Corey Joseph. Another guy they brought in, this is, as I said, they've turned this team completely around, not necessarily for the better, but just new players. Bojan Bogdanovic comes in, and like Darren Collison and Corey Joseph, Bogdanovic is going to be, I think, in somewhat of a battle for the starting small forward position. I imagine that he starts there over Glenn Robinson in the third, but I'm interested to hear your take. Do you think that he will start, or do you think that he should start, if those two answers differ?
So those choices are different. In my opinion, I think Robinson should start, but I think Bogdanovic will because of his experience. You know, I expect them to be even on minutes, close to even. You know, both of them are going to play close to 23, 25 minutes a game. I would hope the Pacers are doing well by the midseason. Robinson kind of overtakes Bogdanovic, at least role at ending games, maybe not starting games, but ending games, because Robinson is younger, so he's a better defender, and he's willing to get a three-point percentage up there. I do think Bogdanovic will be a better scorer than Robinson, and he's proven in his career he is, because Bogdanovic is going to be kind of the spot-up three-point shooter. They're going to sit him in the corner, let him shoot threes all day, but Robinson will come in and play defense. So there's not really a huge fantasy upside to Robinson as there is with Bogdanovic, because Bogdanovic could occasionally hit 21 points a game if he hits 5 or 6 threes, because he could have one of those kind of nights. But I think Bogdanovic will win the starting role, but I really, really would prefer to see Robinson in it.
Yeah, so would I. I would like to have Robinson in that role. Now, Bogdanovic is one of these players that I group in. Nick Young, Wayne Ellington, Troy Daniels, a guy that can come in and hit 2 threes and be a valuable waiver wire streamer for the three-point category, but he does nothing else. He doesn't get assists. He doesn't get any assists. He doesn't get steals. Blocking shots, forget about it. His field goal percentage is poor. But he is a player on this team who can create his own shot, and that can be a valuable thing. He can score. He can have those big, ridiculous 40-point nights, which he has had before in his career. But I don't see him getting 30-plus minutes. I think him and Robinson will be fairly even splitting there. And I actually think that Robinson can be a useful fantasy guy because he can get steals. He can get rebounds. He can hit threes. His field goal percentage is much higher than Bogdanovic's. He can be useful, but I wouldn't be looking at drafting either of these guys. They're just waiver wire type players. And if one really asserts themselves into a significant role, then maybe look at them. But even then, I feel their upside is a little bit limited. But on Robinson, last year he had stints in the starting lineup, and I noticed a real difference, and maybe you can enlighten me if I'm wrong here. But in the games that he started when Paul George wasn't there, he was a completely different player than when he started alongside Paul George. So did you notice that for a start? And do you think that, you know, without George around this season, that he's going to be able to be a little bit more assertive like he was in those games, especially early last season?
Yeah, well, so there was probably, I think it was a 5-7 game stretch where Paul George missed, I think it was a leg injury at the time. So Robinson was inserted in the starting lineup, and they actually played pretty well. I mean, I think a little bit it was Robinson kind of got a little bit of that first taste of what it's like to actually be in the starting role with a team, and it kind of got this kind of like rush, and it helped him play really well. Because there was a game in Oklahoma City, if I remember early on, Robinson had, I don't think he had, I mean, he had a pretty good game, close to 20 points, maybe over that, but he just was really solid. And I just think he didn't play well enough to Paul George, because I think he kind of burned out when the season started to kind of, towards the end of the season, he had an injury at one point, and that kind of, he burned out towards the end. But I mean, any player without Paul George on the floor is going to play worse, I think, in the long run, because Robinson's going to be guarded a lot tougher. He's got to guard small forwards, he's going to be guarded by small forwards at times. So, you know, when Paul George was on the floor, Paul George was taking away most of those kind of, he was always the first, you know, the best defender was always guarding George, and he was always the first option. So that kind of depressed some of Robinson's stats, but I don't see how Robinson's going to be better because George isn't out there. I think, like you said, he is a, you know, you don't pick up in fantasy unless he somehow hits a hot streak and you kind of snag him up for a week or two. But that's kind of my thoughts on Robinson. I think I like to see him kind of improve, but I don't think he's ever going to be like one of the top fantasy small forwards.
He started those five games at the start of last season in November when George was out. He had 16-11 in the first game, 8-5 with two steals in the next game. Then he had 20-6 with four triples and a steal and a block. He had 17-6, and then he had 15-4 with two threes and a steal. And they were the five starts he had without Paul George. So four of those games were very, very good. He got decent usage. He was super efficient. He was grabbing boards. He was hitting threes. He was getting steals. And while I don't expect him to be playing 39 minutes a night or 45 minutes a night like he was in those games, he did show that when he is pushed into a larger role that he can handle it, and he can show some stuff. Like if we, you know, look at the games that he started in January where he's next to Paul George, you know, 27 minutes and 8 points, 25 minutes and 8 points, 30 minutes and 9 points. Like he just wasn't as efficient. He wasn't as aggressive. He wasn't as active on the boards. And it'll be interesting to see how he does take to this new role and whether he can actually push forward and become that guy that gets more minutes over Boyan. It'll be interesting to see how they do that. The other guys that they've signed, Alex Poitras to a two-way deal, Damian Wilkins and Benny Moore, who are going to be very much end of the roster guys if they even stick. Damian Wilkins was an odd signing. I thought, Adam, at the age of 37, I believe he is, for him to come in and them to sign him, it just didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So my co-host, like Tony's Locked Up Rated Pocket, basically said he thinks Wilkins was brought in to basically be kind of a motivator off the bench. Like, not actually play minutes, but kind of be the rah-rah guy out there. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, but you look at the Pacers, they're a really, really young team now. They've gotten super young. I mean, I think Collison might be their oldest player at, like, 30. So that's, like, they needed to bring in somebody just that could kind of, like, show the young guys what to do. So that's kind of his role. I mean, there's a huge possibility Wilkins gets cut before the season starts. His contract, I don't think, is guaranteed, and he's kind of playing on this, can he make the roster or not? So we'll see what happens. I think he'll stay just because I think he can provide some of the wise old men type of thing. But I mean, it could be almost a thing where he becomes an assistant coach eventually. I don't really know what the Pacers are doing with him, but it did kind of surprise me as well.
The players that left this team, there's a laundry list of guys here. Paul George went to the Thunder. Jeff Teague went to the Wolves.
My name is Jeff.
CJ Miles to the Raptors. Monte Ellis has been waived and he isn't signed. Lavoy Allen hasn't been signed. Aaron Brooks, Kevin Serafin, Rodney Stuckey, Rakeem Christmas, and George Niang, who's gone to the Warriors. So a whole bunch of guys who were on this team last year aren't there anymore. So it is going to be a feeling out process, and for us to work out what their roles are going to be and how everything's going to fit with so many new faces. They also brought in three rookies. Edmund Sumner, a second-round pick, is signed to a two-way, so we won't see much of him. But TJ Leaf and Ike Unabogu, both from UCLA. We'll start with TJ Leaf, the first-round pick, a guy who was extremely efficient last season for UCLA, a stretchy type of guy that can hit his threes. But his role, at this point, we'd have to assume it's behind Young and behind Sabonis. And like Sabonis, for him to become a more meaningful player, it's going to require a trade of Thad Young. Did you like that pick of Leaf? And do you think there is a chance that what he could show might actually, you know, surpass where Sabonis is?
You know, I think Leaf was the best available player at the 18th pick, so I don't mind it. We'll see what happens with him. He has some huge offensive upside, but I don't think he necessarily has the skill set to be a great defender in the NBA or be any, you know, the speed to kind of play with some of the elite players. But, I mean, I'm hoping that by about the 40 or 50th game point, either Inabogu or Leaf can kind of pop a little bit and show some of the potential, maybe take over some of Al Jefferson's minutes. I'm not a huge fan of Jefferson. I really hope he doesn't play more than 10 minutes a game because he was really bad last year. And so I hope one of those guys can kind of take over his minutes. I don't expect either of them to basically get any significant minutes until the 40th game. They'll probably spend most of the season with the Mad Ants. Leaf will probably spend the first 20, 30 games with the Mad Ants, and then we'll kind of see what happens with that. He, you know, they probably want to bring him in at some point to get him some experience to see what he has. But I again, on fantasy, I wouldn't take either of those guys. But that, I think you don't really take any rookies unless you're taking maybe you take like Ben Simmons. So, you know, you won't take any rookies in fantasy.
What do you think of TJ Leaf long term? Do you think that he can develop into a starting caliber player?
So he sort of fits the mold of that stretch, right? He's like the definition of a stretch four. He's kind of this tall, lanky kid who can was a really good shooter, has great touch around the rim. I mean, he's got some of those unique skill sets scoring wise that, I mean, you love to see in young players. I mean, I was watching some highlights of Leaf. I remember and he just has his ability when he gets close to the rim to be able to put up floaters with his right hand off the glass. I mean, he has some real touch that you see that a lot of big guys don't have. So he could be an elite level scorer. I mean, that's his best option. I mean, I think he'll be a decent scorer throughout his career if he can just kind of put on some size. He's a really thin kid. Now, what college kid is 19 isn't thin? I tell you, I'm 19. I'm really thin too. So, but I just don't see him defensively ever becoming good enough to be kind of at least an elite level player. He could probably be a starting stretch four, just depending who's around him. You know, he's got to be around three or four other great players, but he's never going to be the second or maybe not even the third option on a team.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't have huge fantasy hopes for him moving forward or even, you know, to him to even become an average level starter in the NBA. As for Anabogu, knee injuries are the real concern with him. He's got a massive body as well, which is an issue for someone as young as he is, and the size that he is, the weight on the knees is a real concern. He can block shots at a decent rate, but I wouldn't be putting huge amount of faith in him at any point in becoming a reliable starting caliber center or even a backup center that's playing 20 minutes a night. I just don't think that the NBA is going to be able to cater to a player like that. And I don't think I'm almost sure we're not going to see anything from him this season. Now, I do want to talk about Thad Young, who was an interesting player last season. He had a through-the-roof steal rate to begin the season, and then he hurt his wrist, and everything just fell off. And when he came back, his steal rate dropped considerably. I think he was only getting one steal a game after he came back. He couldn't hit shots. He just looked abysmal. His minutes dropped down. Do you think that the wrist is fine now? And do you think that those minutes that where he was getting reduced minutes in that second half of the season, do you think that McMillan might actually stick with that this year and not push him to, you know, 32 or 33 minutes a night?
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and oldnavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10, select styles only.
So I expect Young to be healthy. I believe he's a lot healthier than last season. I mean, his wrist, after his wrist got hurt, not including his steal rate, but his three-point shooting, he was actually a pretty decent three-point shooter until that point. Then he stopped shooting, I think, because he didn't feel confident. So I expect him to be back at, you know, at least his wrist should be close to 90 to 100%. I don't know long-term implications what happened there. But, I mean, minutes-wise, you know, it just depends, I think, on the flow of a game. You know, the Pacers, it depends what they feel with Sabonis, how they want to feel him out, because I'm not sure Thad Young is in their long-term future. I think Thad Young is probably at the 40-50 game mark, see where we're at, and maybe we trade him for a first-round pick, a late first-round pick, to him to like a contender, maybe like Houston. But fantasy-wise, I think Thad could get up to 15 points if his three-point shooting returns to the way it was early on the season, because he was shooting, you know, he would shoot two or three of those a game midseason, and he was hitting, I think, at an above 35% rate, so there's that possibility with him. I think if you draft him now, don't expect him to be on the Pacers by whatever when you're in the playoffs. So his minutes might decrease. So, you know, he's kind of that player that can help you win games now in fantasy, but I'm not sure when it comes to your fantasy playoffs, he's going to be anywhere near a significant amount of minutes going to help you.
Yeah, that, and that's the thing. But the good thing is about Thad Young is he's getting drafted at pick 134 on Yahoo or pick 111 on ESPN, and you can get for 4 months top 75 production. And then if he does drop down and play 27 minutes a night in another team, then he probably equals the value of that ADP at that spot. So it's really no downside to it. Yes, his minutes might drop, but you've paid nothing to get him. So you'll get above average production for the first 4 months, and then you get value that's commensurate with where you would have drafted him. So I think that he's a decent pick. The steals are elite for a power forward. He can rebound a bit. He can hit some threes. The scoring, the field goal percentage is all okay. So I think he's rock solid as a guy that's a top 75 guy while he's on the paces. You don't have to pick him there. You can grab him at 90. Grab him at pick 100. On Yahoo, you can let him slide even further if you want. You can really help to boost that steals category up and get some power forward or some consistent power forward minutes out of a player. And Young is going to be a real valuable piece there, I think. And it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Now, you did touch about Al Jefferson before, and you were right. He was horrendous last season. The Pacers actually looked much better when they played Rakeem Christmas and Kevin Seraphin over him. And it just feels like that A, his skills have declined, B, his injuries never recovering from, and C, that the NBA has gone past him. So it's going to be hard to see him playing any sort of significant role. People told me last year, Adam, that when they signed him, he was going to start over Miles Turner, and I laughed electronically at them when I replied to them. He's just not playing that much this year, is he?
No, so... Now, I've premised this before. Jefferson had a great career, but I think his days in the league are numbered at this point. I mean, he's age. He plays a position that doesn't really exist anymore. There's no more of banging centers. I mean, you see a guy like Greg Monroe, who is basically the same kind of player as Jefferson and probably younger and better at this point, and he doesn't get minutes. So, I mean, like, I think Jefferson, because they owe him $10 million, he'll be on the roster. Like I said, he's their oldest player on the roster, so he'll provide some of that veteran support. But I don't think at some point they're going to have to probably stop cutting his minutes if they want to win games. Now, the Patriots could be in a tanking mode at some point and decide we're going to play him 15 minutes just because we want to lose. But, I mean, he shouldn't. I mean, at some point, TJ Leaf should take over Jefferson's minutes. It's a bonus and shift to the center position. So I hope, as a Pacer fan, I don't see a lot of Jefferson because he had, like, about a good start to the season, and then he got hurt, and then he can't play defense, and he can basically – shoot inside jumpers kind of thing, and that's about it. And it's not really that good for the Pacer team to be shooting from the 15-foot range. And so stay away from him on fantasy for sure. Like, he's not going to get more than 10 minutes a game, I would hope. And he's not going to put up anything significantly. So stay away from him on fantasy. But Pacers-wise, I hope I see less and less of him throughout the season.
Yeah, he's not even a top 300 player. For some reason, he has an ADP of 140 on Yahoo. Hopefully, that's just one person that took him at 140, and that's it. There is absolutely nothing to see there for Al Jefferson. And when this contract is up, he won't be in the NBA. Like, fairly reminiscent, and I think people forget this, Roy Hibbert isn't in the NBA anymore. Like, he's a former Pacers center, all-star. He's not in the NBA anymore, and that's going to be Al Jefferson's future next season. Like, he just won't play because they're just done. Like, they're just finished. And it's weird to think that how far Hibbert has fallen and how far Jefferson was a top 50 player 2 years ago, maybe even higher than that. And he is just done. It's not happening. He's not coming back. We don't have to think too much more about that. Now, the guy we do want to talk about is the guy playing that position who is now the new face of the franchise. That's Miles Turner. He heads into his third season. He is a significantly popular fantasy guy. He did struggle a little bit down the stretch last year, but he is a guy that you're going to look at in the second round of drafts. He's getting picked at 29 and 33 on Yahoo and ESPN, respectively. That's too low. If you want to take him in the top 20, I've got no problem with that. He is a shot-blocking, three-point shooting, good free throw, good field goal percentage center who's going to see a rise in his usage rate this season. And he's going to put up some big, big numbers. Now, I'll let you talk about Turner for a second. I want to talk about him and Porzingis as a comparison. But Turner, as he moves forward, he is the man now for this team as their face. But what happened with him at the end of last season that saw his play decline over those last couple of months?
You know, I think people forget his first season that he only played about 50 games.
Yep.
Because he was hurt about the first 30. So I think he kind of hit that sophomore wall, I guess, at that point, but it's kind of the rookie wall where, you know, these guys, a lot of the young guys, never played more than 30 games in a season. I mean, they played AAU the year, but they haven't played more and 30 really competitive games outside of college, and playing an NBA schedule is tough. I mean, it's tough to play an NBA schedule. So a lot of players hit slumps in the walls. I mean, you saw with Paul George even a little bit last season. He hit kind of a wall at one point and then got it back. But I expect him, the turn of this season at least, to get past that. He's in his third year. He probably has his feet under him. He feels pretty good that he knows the league now. He knows what it takes to kind of compete in the league, what kind of conditioning he has to go through in the offseason to be able to play at a high level. And I like you just said, I think he's a top 20 at least fantasy player just because I think he's the guy that's going to benefit most from Paul George being out because he's going to get more shots. I mean, Turner should come close to 20 points a game. He's probably going to get maybe close to 10 rebounds a game. He'll have a couple blocks run in there. I mean, he's going to have some big statness because he's a stretch five that can shoot the three, and he's been working on his inside game a lot. So I expect Turner to break 20 points this year, and if he doesn't, I'd be really disappointed.
I don't have him projected at 20. I'm probably a little bit under on where he needs to, only at 17.5, but I think that's part of we haven't seen him shoot the three at a high level. He's like a sub 30% shooter, but if he gets that to 35 or 36, which I believe that he can at some point, then that does unlock that, and he hits an extra three a game or half a three a game, then we're talking 20 points, and it's very easy for him to get there. He is a very simple top two round guy, first two round sort of player. The question I'm getting the most from everyone is, who do I take, Porzingis or Turner? It's the most common question I'm getting. And I'll answer it here for everyone who ever wants to ask that question again. I've got them ranked basically right next to each other. So they're pretty similar. They're going to score close to 20 points each. They're going to get their 7 to 9 rebounds. They're going to block 2 shots per game. They'll get a steal. Their assists won't be great. They'll be the same. They'll shoot a good free throw percentage. The difference that we're going to have with these guys is that Porzingis can hit 2 threes a game. Like we're fairly confident he's going to do that. But he'll do it at 45% from the field. Miles Turner might be at 0.8 threes a game, but he'll shoot over 50% from the field. So it's, do you want field goal percentage or do you want three-pointers as to who you pick in that spot there? Their minutes are going to be fine. I lean Turner just. I know that Mallow might leave and Porzingis might get this huge boost in usage and all that. That might happen. It might not. But it's harder to influence your field goal percentage category later in the draft where it's easier to do it with three-pointers. So I take Turner just ahead of Porzingis. But they are so close to each other that it doesn't really matter which way you want to go, and it all depends on whether you want threes or whether you want field goal percentage. That's the two differences between those guys. Get it out there now, because I'm sure I'm still going to get questions about it, but I just constantly keep getting asked that question about, do I want Porzingis or Turner? And if you get either of them, I think you should be pretty happy with either of those players. Joe Young had a real regression last season. I thought that he should have been given an opportunity to play backup point guard over Aaron Brooks. That didn't happen, but and he struggled. Is he a guy now? He's clearly in that third string point guard role. But what does he need to do to get himself and really salvage his NBA career at this point?
He's got to get better at passing. I mean, he is kind of an out of control player. He's too small to play shooting guard. Like a player like Lance, who's very out of control sometimes, but is tall enough to play shooting guard. You know. I mean, I think Young is just have to sit. Hopefully he's getting better in the offseason and sit and wait. Maybe Collison gets hurt. Maybe Justin gets hurt. I mean, Collison's kind of older, so there's a chance of that. And if he gets a chance to play anything more than 10 minutes a game and actually significant playing time in a meaningful game, he should take advantage of that moment and try to show his best, because I don't think he's going to be on the roster next season. I think he's playing right now for a contract as basically a minimum contract on the back of another team's bench, because clearly the Pacers not seen enough out of him to make him anything close to a backup point guard. Otherwise, he would be a backup point guard for them. They would have gone out and got Joseph or even Collison. They really trust Young, but they clearly don't, and they've had him for 2 years now. So, I hope Young takes advantage of the opportunities he's given if a player is hurt, because if not, he probably will be another player that's playing in Europe next season or in the D-League.
Yep, I think that's fair. Like I had decently high hopes for him, but he sucked last season pretty much, and he's got a long way to go. Adam, who would be your breakout candidate on this team? You can frame it however you want. Use whatever criteria you want. There's lots of different options here, I think, on this team.
So, the best player, like fantasy-wise, clearly is going to be Turner. Yep. I think Oladipo has a chance, but it's going to be Turner because he's going to get the most shots. Like I said earlier, I'm still holding out hope for 2013 Lance. I think there is a small possibility maybe that Lance, something about being in Indianapolis, ends up getting back to kind of some of that form he had 3 or 4 years ago and plays, stays healthy, of course, and plays really well and ends up kind of almost becoming in a starting small forward, you know, taking minutes maybe away from Bogdanović at times, because Lance is more dynamic than any other player they have. Robinson is up there with Lance on his ability to play defense and offense, but Lance can be point guard at times even too. So I think Lance has an outside possibility of being kind of a breakout player. But again, maybe take him as a flyer at the end of your draft, or let him sit in the free agents on your fantasy league and just pick him up if you see him kind of start to pop. But Turner's going to be the best player, so you know, if you can get one pacer, go after Turner, because he's going to be the best player before. He's going to put up probably a double-double almost every night.
I'm not that interested in Lance Stephenson. Look, it's just been so long since we've seen anything from him. I also believe that his first run in Indiana was a little bit overrated, because people love triple-doubles. So the fact that he had the most triple-doubles in the league, everyone was significantly overrating what he was doing.
You shouldn't come to Indiana.
Yeah, I know that he's well-loved there, so I'll steer clear of there for a couple of years. But the fact that they brought in three guards this season says to me that they are not feeling confident in playing him large amount of minutes. They've got Oladipo, Collison, and Joseph all brought in this season. Makes me think he'll be the primary backup at shooting guard. He'll play 20 minutes, but if they had had confidence in him being more of a ball handler or play a large role, they wouldn't have brought in three separate guards, I wouldn't have thought. So that's why I'm a little bit down on Lance. Yeah, Miles Turner, I think, breaks out, and people actually in the NBA will start to realize just how good this guy is in fantasy circles and the regular NBA, so he's a nice one. And if I'm going to go deeper, Glenn Robinson III could really step up and take control of that starting small forward job. That's probably more of a long shot, but that's something that could happen. If I want to talk about value guys, I think there's tons. Yeah, Turner's a good value pick. Oladipo's a great value pick. Thad Young is sensational at that spot, and so is Darren Collison. Whereas Bojan Bogdanović is going at 125. I just don't really see. I don't see him getting to that value. I don't see him ever being able to exceed that value, and that's just not a smart selection to me. And as I said, you know, people who are taking Al Jefferson at 140 or TJ Leaf at 140, well, I think they're just clearly taking the piss, because that's just not going to work out for anybody. Before I let you go, Adam, the over-under for Vegas is set 31.5. How do you feel about that? Do you take the over? Do you take the under?
I am taking the under. As much as Pacer fans might be mad at me, I'm going to take the under on that one. I just mapped out their schedule, kind of marked wins and losses, and I got them between 20, 30 wins. I mean, like I said, there's always an outside chance they win 35 games just because they're playing in the Eastern Conference, and the Eastern Conference is not very good, and Miles Turner has some potential out there we see. But this team is basically, it's a brand new team, so it's going to take at least 20 games to get any kind of chemistry going. And by that point, if by the 50-game point, you know, they're not any good, not in a playoff race, they have no reason not to just tank it all out, trade away maybe Collison, Young, and Bogdanović if they can, and try to go for that first pick, because the future is Turner and it's Oladipo. So, and if they're not even in, I know Herb Simon, the owner, wants to be in the playoff race, but if they're not at 50-game points, they got to be going for that first pick, or at least the best pick as possible. So I would take the under. I just don't see them getting 35 wins unless, you know, Turner has like, if Turner wins the MIP award, they'll have won 35 games.
I actually think they might go over, but not to 35, maybe 33, maybe 32 wins. So just a soft over. But I can totally see them getting going under. The problem is, I just think that there's so many teams that are worse than them. The Knicks, the Magic, the Nets, the Bulls, the Hawks, I think are all worse than the Pacers. And some of these decent veterans like Joseph, like Bogdanović, like Collison, like Oladipo, an ascension from Turner might be able to push him over that 31, but it's not a strong feeling that I have about that. Adam, I reckon we are done. We have covered the Pacers. Just let everyone know what's happening on Locked On Pacers and anything else that you want to plug and promote.
Yeah, so we're doing the Locked On Pacers podcast. Basically, it comes out every Monday until the season starts. Then once the season gets going, we're going to try to do probably basically a podcast every day. So there's going to be a little bit of some Pacer updates. We'll do have some guests, stuff like that. Right now we're in the dog days of summer basketball. So basically, I've been talking about European basketball, the Eurobasket tournament, because Bogdanović is playing in it. So, I think it's going to get really interesting. I mean, the Pacers may not be, if you're a Pacers fan, you'll want to listen to our podcast. If you're not a Pacers fan, I encourage you to tune in and take a look, because I think, they'll be interesting to talk about. I hope Miles Turner has a good year, so there's a lot to talk about. If not, this is going to be one of the more boring NBA teams. But I promise, if you're a Pacers fan, you'll really enjoy our podcast.
Do you think that Miles Turner can make the All-Star team?
You know, I was looking at the East, and the East Conference is very weak. So, there's going to be a lot of spots up for grabs. I mean, they've lost what? They lost 5 All-Stars this year, and that's saying Isaiah Thomas is healthy. And, there's just so much up for grabs right now in the East. So there's an outside chance I think he does. Like I said, if he has 20 points a game, he probably won't make the All-Star game because he'll probably take over that mantle as, like, one of the more proving players. Like, I think there's a chance – we were talking about Porzingis earlier where – Turner kind of overtakes Porzingis as maybe Turner could be the next great stretch five, not Porzingis, because I'm not a huge fan of Porzingis just because I think of injury and stuff like that. So, but, you know, I hope he makes the All-Star game. I think it'll be fun if he does, but I wouldn't put a lot of money on it.
No, I think he's an outside shot at it. So that'll be interesting to see. Now, subscribe to Adam's podcast, Locked On Pacers, and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify, and leave us both 5-star reviews. That's a great way to help the show. Downloading the show obviously helps also, and it's a great way to help support everything that we are trying to do here across the Locked On Podcast Network. Adam, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me on.
We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Victor Oladipo.